This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. I've been testing this on friends. If you could forget everything about your job when you left for the day, would you? If you could forget your personal life at work, would you? That's the premise of a dystopian sci-fi dark comedy called Severance that's become a hit. It's hard to find a more on-target satire about the modern workplace. In the show, streaming on Apple TV+, people working for a shady megacorporation called Lumen get something inserted in their head that severs work life from home life.
Do I have a family?
You'll never know.
And I have no choice.
Well, every time you find yourself here, it's because you chose to come back.
The series creator, showrunner, and head writer is Dan Erickson. Thanks for linking up here, Dan.
Hello, thank you. So nice to be here.
Dan, what did somebody ever do to you in an office setting that led you to tell this tale?
Oh, so much, so much. No, it was a series of, I don't think I ever had a job that was particularly nightmarish compared to, you know, anybody else's job. But it was a series of sort of temp jobs that I had while I was working on this script, you know, 9-10 years ago. And I just started to notice a lot of these weird corporatisms that would come through in each of the jobs. And they sort of started to build this image of this weird monolithic company that I wanted to tell this story about.
I mean, I was reading that even at an advanced stage of this project, when you first learn that Ben Stiller himself might be interested, or at least you get the meeting, is it true you were driving for Postmates at that point?
It's true. I was driving for Postmates, and I was terrible at it. I was like their worst driver in Los Angeles, I think. Because I was like, It was a few nights before I had had I didn't have a car. I had a little scooter, like a Vespa style scooter. And I had rigged this thing on the back to, you know, carry food around. And just this giant order that I had been driving had I was almost at the place and I was already really late. And all of a sudden I look back and it's just gone flying off the back of my scooter and has been run over by a car. So it was like that happened, I think, like 2 days before, you know, we had the Ben meeting, or I had the Ben meeting. That was quite a week.
It's that sort of situation, right, where you're doing this work, which may or may not be ennobling at the moment, but if you could just get through to the end of the day, and that's when you could use a little severance in your life, a little, I don't know, disassociation.
Yeah, it's funny. I always say that I wouldn't get the surgery. Like, I wouldn't let them put the chip in my head, but on a day-to-day basis, like, there have definitely been days where they're like, hey, do you want to sever today? And I would be like, yes, hell yes. You know, it's sometimes you're just walking into work and it's so daunting, the idea of going in and spending 8 hours in a particular place. So I think sometimes on a day-to-day basis, I would do it.
Well, at some level, we encourage managers to disconnect between their personal selves and their work selves. I mean, I know a business school professor, he's retired now, who says that many MBA programs select for sociopaths, right? Because if you're trying to groom the manager who can do a mass layoff and then move on with the rest of his day like nothing happened, right? That person has to set aside who he really is or who she really is.
Yeah, that's terrifying. And yeah, it's absolutely, you know, one of the main things that the show is about is this idea that you put yourself in a particular place or situation where you act in a way that is completely different from how you would normally act, and that you're able to sort of disassociate and segment that part of yourself off and say, well, that wasn't me, that was work me. I would never actually do something like that. And, you know, it's just, I found as I was going to these different jobs, you know, I fortunately was never in a high enough position to have to, you know, lay off a bunch of people or anything like that. But I found that I was wearing, you know, a mask at each of these different places, you know, the temp job at the dentist office where I worked, you know, I was a very different person from, you know, the school where I was a, you know, registrar for a while. You know, it's just weird. You become this different version of yourself depending on what you think is expected. And sometimes that can get really dark.
And the show demonstrates the following as well. We do it in reverse, right? We may have a terrible trauma in our personal lives and are expected to show up at work, you know, up and at 'em, chipper and focused, and somehow again, disassociate from what we just went through before we walked in the door.
Yeah. One of the most disturbing things that I realized as I was writing it is it can be hard to disassociate in that way from your real life, but it can be a major comfort too. And there was I remember when I was writing the pilot, I had gone through like a pretty devastating breakup just you know, a couple of months prior, and was still, you know, feeling it really hard. But there was something about going in and sitting at a desk and just not having to think about my own motivations at all, and just be like, well, I'm entering this data because I was told to, and I'm sort of turning off my brain and turning off my heart. And it's like, it's a dark thing to find yourself wanting to do, but it was a comfort. Like, there is a comfort in that monotony. And that was part of what I found so scary about the whole thing as I was crafting the story.
Now, some of the workers at your fictional Lumen Industries Corporation do things like staring at fields of numbers, looking for what is termed like bad numbers, malevolent numbers, and then trying to dump them through a virtual trapdoor at the bottom of their screens. Why they do this, they have no idea. Here's a moment from the show.
I mean, why won't they tell us what we're doing here? What are they so afraid of? If the Egan philosophy is illumination above all.
Illumination beyond all, but yes.
Then why doesn't that include us? Why are we down here still working in the dark?
Yeah, working in the dark. See, what's missing in this corporation you invented, Dan, is what the management philosophers call purpose, right? And they've linked this with employee performance. If you don't know what you're doing, you're probably not going to be that committed to the activity.
Right. Well, it's funny, though, because they try to manufacture that in this sort of weird artificial ways. Because you're right that the workers don't know and sort of can't know what the numbers are or what the actual nature of the work is. But then there are finger traps and there are caricature portraits and there are these little prizes that have come to signify achievement and signify importance to them. And it's, you know, I mean, it's very much on the outside, you know, that's getting a new house or getting a new car. There's all these sort of little status symbols that we endow with meaning because we need them to mean something. And not that a new house isn't great, they are. But I feel like for Dylan especially, that is where he derives meaning. Whereas someone like Irving is more of the zealot who is sort of more into this quasi-religious corporate history and corporate culture surrounding Keir Egan and everybody. Like, you know, but the common theme being that everybody is trying to find meaning in this place, and we sort of look for things that work for us to signify meaning and signify importance.
Keir Egan is the charismatic, the legendary founder of this Lumen Industries. You see a big statue to him that is revered earlier in the series. Now, by the way, on this idea of lack of purpose, it's been documented. I know this is nerding out, but I found a McKinsey study. And they did a survey. Are you living your purpose in your day-to-day work? 49% disagreed or strongly disagreed. 36% weren't sure. So about 85% were not suffused with purpose or weren't sure. So it's like what we see in your fiction.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, and I've definitely had jobs where it was sort of jobs that sort of exist within a bureaucracy and in such a way where it's like, The job might not necessarily need to exist except that it's part of the bureaucratic structure. And so you do, I've had jobs like that where I'm just like, I don't know who I'm helping. I don't know what actual other human being on earth is benefiting from what I'm doing. And if there is a purpose, I'm not seeing it. And it's a disconcerting place to be.
Yeah, and apparently it's really bad management. Now, we work in our little silos, which become tribes that compete for resources. The management consultants tell us not to do it that way, but that's what happens. Now, in your show, these silos breed, I don't know what, deep suspicion, right?
Yeah. That was a fun thing, the sort of weird tribalism that has popped up between the departments. And that was sort of a fun thing that we that we were playing. Obviously, you've got the sort of Romeo and Juliet love story happening between, you know, Bert and Irving, who are, you know, in these two different departments. But that was always something that sort of felt like it went with the theme of severance and the theme of disassociation. And on a macro level, what does that look like? And I think a lot of times it looks like, you know, even within a company itself, you often don't know what the other departments are doing. And, you know, if management doesn't want you to know or doesn't want you to ask those big questions, then one of their tools might be to pit you against each other and sort of divide and conquer a little bit and breed mistrust of people who are working on your same level so that you're not focused on, you know, the people who are actually exploiting you, which in this case is, and in many cases are the bosses.
Yeah, and your show has some optimism on this point of inter-office rivalry as well. I mean, if there can be some détente or a meeting of minds between these opposing sections of the same corporation, maybe the workers can use it to organize and push back, you know, when macro data refinement, that's one of the divisions, tries to kind of embrace optics and design. You know, maybe there's some power in that.
I think there's a lot of power in that. I think, yeah, absolutely. And it is I think it's a hopeful show. And maybe that's just from my perspective, but I think it's very much a show about people discovering and awakening the humanity in each other in a place like this, in this sort of soulless, you know, world. And, you know, that applies on a personal level. And then, yeah, on sort of like a workers' rights, you know, organizing level, where it is like what you see in this season is sort of the first coming together of these two departments that had been artificially kept apart. And these people starting to say, you know, we might be stronger together than we are separately, which I think is it's a hopeful idea and it's a hopeful moment in the show.
There's an extended scene from your show that went, I guess I could say, viral. It's that party scene where Milchick, the manager, shows up to orchestrate a brief dance party. The employees didn't ask for it, but they're goaded to go along. It's weird timing here because in a few hours here at Marketplace, our boss is pushing us together for some office social merriment. I'm sure it'll be fun. But, I mean, that's part of the what's on offer within organizations are these moments, but you can't really be your full real self. You stay severed at these things, you know, on the job in real life, right? I mean, you're not going to just be the regular Dan Erickson if there's an office party.
No, they think they want that, but they don't want that. Yeah, no, it's such a weird scene, and it's such a, I feel like to me, it's like simultaneously the funniest and scariest scene on the show. You know, you have to give a lot of that credit to Tramell Tillman, who's just an absolutely brilliant actor and has this way of suffusing the most like terrifying malice into every smile and kind word. You know, you often can't tell what's going on with him. But yeah, I mean, that scene is very much, it's sort of, you know, saying it's like casual Fridays, wear what you want, but don't wear anything you want. You know, it's giving them this sort of illusion of self-expression and individuality and merriment for a moment before it's sort of taken away. I think it's my favorite scene in the whole season, and which is ironic because I'm the idiot who tried to cut it in the scripting phase. We were looking at stuff that where we could pull back and simplify the story. And I was like, well, what about this dance scene? Why do they need to dance? What is that? I've seen dancing. We don't need that. And you know, it was Ben, you know, Mr. Ben Stiller who was like, you know, I have this, I think it's going to be really special. I think it's going to be really cool. He and Mark Friedman, the other producer. And it was the moment that, you know, the lights turned to the disco lights and Tramell started moving. I was like, well, I was wrong.
So, I mean, I don't know if the showrunner actually gets to be, you know, on set at every moment. I did a little field trip the other day, 35 minutes south of Newark, New Jersey Airport is the old Bell Labs. That's Lumen Industries, right?
That's Lumen. Yeah.
Yeah, you can go in as the public to the first floor. It's, you know, a hipster office space upstairs and kind of a mall thing downstairs. But boy, the hair goes up on the back of your neck because it's what you guys used, right?
It's so crazy. And it was I believe that was the first location we scouted for Lumen. And we were just blown away because we were like, it's such a crazy, insane building. It's so perfect for what we need. And somehow, like, I don't think anyone's shot there. Like, there may have been a couple of small things, but I think for the most part, you know, it's not like a building that you see in a bunch of shows or movies, which is kind of inexplicable to me because it's so cool. But I think it had just recently been sort of renovated and changed to this different thing where, yeah, like there is sort of like a like this mall, you know, on the base floor of it. So I think we just lucked out with the timing. But that building was great. It's just so weird to sit in that space because it's so massive.
Yeah, it's so intense. And, you know, Bell Labs, AT&T Bell Labs, was where a lot of the 20th century was invented. Dan Erickson, creator, showrunner, and head writer of Severance. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you. I really appreciate it.